Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Sowing the seeds of cannabis and sounding the praise of our favorite plant, it's time to Hemp Present. Our radio resident hemposapien Vivian McPeak will present a weekly platform for guests and listeners to Hemp Present about hemp and cannabis from the legal, activist, and reformist route. Let's round up and roll it up for our headmaster of hemp, Vivian McPeak.
My friends, I am Vivian McPeak, and this is Hemp Present. If you have feedback or would like to suggest a guest or topic for Hemp Present, email me at hemppresent@gmail.com. I greatly enjoy hearing from you, the listener. Today's guest on Hemp Present is Malcolm McKinnon. Malcolm is a veteran photojournalist and widely considered to be one of the foremost cannabis photographers in the world. His work has been published in over 200 publications worldwide, and he has interviewed and photographed a wide range of celebrities. As the former editor-in-chief of High Times magazine, he worked under the pen name of Dan Sky. Malcolm also served as executive editor of Hemp Times, a sister publication. During his 25-year career with High Times, he shot over 50 covers and centerfolds and traveled over a million miles on assignments, becoming the most published writer and photographer in the magazine's history. For over 30 years, Malcolm has also covered Native American issues, amassing a huge archive of imagery, and he's here to tell us more about it. Welcome, Malcolm, to Cannabis Radio.
Oh, thank you so much for Vivian having me. Pleased to be here.
My pleasure, old friend. I have so many questions about your amazing experiences, all those years that you were the photographer, the photojournalist, the lead photographer for High Times. But first, let me just ask you, how did you become involved in photography to begin with?
You know, really, I'll tell you, Vivian, it's like my third career. I started off, when I came to New York in 1976 to be an actor. And then I went into the fitness industry. And my wife had given me a little snapshot camera. And I got very, very good with a little snapshot camera. And one Christmas, 1983, she gave me a Canon AE-1. And I worked like hell just taking photos. But I didn't work for High Times until 1990. And that was because of Peter Gorman, who was going on an assignment out in Oklahoma to do a story on Quanah Parker, the great Comanche chief. And he recommended me to Stephen Hager, who was the editor-in-chief at that time. And the rest is history. That was my first assignment, and that was 30 years ago. Good Lord.
It's funny you mentioned Peter that way, because I met Peter Gorman when he was on assignment at the Oregon Country Fair. And I was leading the Dragon Parade around the same time. And he comes up and he says, like, hey, I'm a photographer with High Times. I'd like to take some pictures of you guys. And I'm like, oh, High Times. I'm with Seattle Hemp Fest, and we struck up a conversation. So I really identify with the fact that, he was going out doing that stuff. So being the chief photographic journalist for High Times magazine, from 1990 to 2017, I think, something like that.
Right, exactly.
It just seems like one of the coolest jobs in the known universe. I'm just curious how you managed to score that position.
Well, like I said, Peter recommended me for that job. Peter and I worked together in the 70s. I was a waiter and he was a cook at one of the restaurants in the Upper East Side of New York City. And we became good friends. And I became better and better as a photographer, he recommended me. The fact is, Vivian, nobody gets anywhere. Nobody's a self-made person. You need help to get where you go. And Peter Gorman was instrumental. So was Steve Hager. He was, he encouraged me and gave me assignments. And, I tried to rise to the occasion, every time I tried to really, really score. And of course, Frank Max, who was the art director, who remains the art director at High Times, made all of my photos look so wonderful. So, I owe my success to so many people who helped me along the way and who recommended me for things. I was lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time. 1991, when I did my first full feature for High Times, it was, smoking marijuana and growing marijuana was extremely dangerous. So I was happened to be at the right place at the right time. Obviously, there were people who preceded me in the cannabis industry, people like, Jack Herer, of course, and Steve D'Angelo, Debbie Goldsberry, all these wonderful people who were doing stuff in the 80s. I came along and I photographed Jack Herer. I met Dennis Perrone. I was at the San Francisco Buyers Club. I was part of the Navajo Hemp Project, the Lakota Hemp Project. So in this time frame, I happened to be kind of like the Forrest Gump of cannabis. I happened to be at the right place, the right all the time. So I was very, very fortunate.
I consider that period to be the golden years of High Times, personally.
It sure was. It really was. I mean, because, we were an adversarial magazine. We were taking on the government, and we were doing things that nobody else dared to do, saying things that nobody else dared to say. And, it was a scary time a lot of times because the government came after us. The government came after High Times through the Green Merchant investigation, where they went after people's UPS records to see if they had bought hydroponic equipment. That would happen in the early 90s. And then later, they tried to take High Times down through the glass industry, tried to destroy all our advertising by launching Operation Headhunter and Pipe Dreams in order to take down all the glass blowers. But High Times survived. Then, we were all part of that. So over the 25 years, working at High Times was, kind of sometimes harrowing, a lot of fun, but like The Office on TV, it's still an office. A lot of crazy shit goes on in an office. That's all I can say.
Well, I'm proud to say that I've actually took a toke on the balcony outside the High Times office in New York one time. So what was the process by which you received your assignment? You said that Steve,
the thing is, when I started out, I was doing, very, very few assignments, but, you prove yourself as you go along. And, he assigned me to go photograph Jack Herer for the first cover. And that was January of 1995. And I flew out to L.A. I had met Jack just only a couple months earlier in 1994 at the first Hemp Industries Association convention. I'd only met him a couple months earlier, went out and stayed at his house for a few days, photographed him in every kind of situation. And that kind of launched me because I wrote an article about the hemp industry at that point. And it just, for some reason, it just accord with everybody. And at that point, after a lot of bad sales over the years, this was the highest selling issue of High Times for years with Jack Herer on the cover, and that was the April 1995 cover. So he, Hager gave me that assignment, and from there I kind of launched a career. Then I became the executive editor of Hemp Times simultaneously. So I was working with Hemp Times and High Times simultaneously, which was really just a great experience for me. And I was able to develop myself as a photographer and as a writer. I was able to, get my work published in a, just amazingly prolific way. So it was, it was a golden age, as you say, for me, especially at High Times and Hemp Times.
So would they just say like, hey, Malcolm, we want you to go to Nepal and hook up this guy and take pictures of these Nepalese hash balls or something, right? And you would get on a donkey or something. I mean, how did that work?
Never.
I made all that up, of course.
Of course, never quite got that exotic. But I was able to go to Jamaica and Orange Hill and see the biggest plantations of marijuana I've ever that you can possibly see, where you look up the side of a mountain and it's all cannabis, that kind of stuff. And of course, Trinity County is the wild, wild west of cannabis, or it was back when I was shooting it back in the early 2000s and the late 90s. That place is, when you see these massive gardens of marijuana up there in Trinity County, I find that, is as exotic as Jamaica when you get down to it. I was able to, one of the more exotic places I saw a huge outdoor field in southern Holland. Now, Holland has a very, very high latitude. Seeing an outdoor crop of that size was absolutely amazing. That was back in the mid 90s as well. So, I was able to get around and, I was able to, if people had great stuff to shoot, I pitched it and got permission to go shoot it. And you know, I was on the road so much of the time, and I have to thank my lovely wife, Susan, who raised two kids while I was away, and did so much of the work of, running a household while I was doing things. So, got to say that.
Yeah, when I was playing in bands, we called that a rock and roll widow, right? Because you'd be on the road touring,
yeah, really.
And that was a real form of support. So during your time at High Times, you went by the pseudonym of Dan Sky. I'm just curious. I think we kind of established what you were concerned about in those days.
Right.
Why did you want to associate your real name? But where did Dan Sky come from?
Well, the funny thing is, the people who ran the magazine or the owners, they wanted me to separate myself from Hemp Times, just have a different name for Hemp Times than I had from High Times. And one day the art director came into my office, and I had been doing a few New Age stories, and one of these New Age people out in Sedona, Arizona, had given me a CD that was called Skydance. And so the art director came into my office and just started making fun of me because he was a real rock and roller. And, so he said, "That's Skydance." He started calling me Skydance. So I reversed Skydance into Dan Sky. And that's how it that's how it really came about. But the CD was by Ani Williams, who is one of these New Age artists. And the fact is, Ani is a great music creator. So
that's great music actually to work to.
Yeah, sure is.
I like to put on that kind of New Age stuff in the background because there's nothing distracting about it. And it
exactly,
great
I do it too, Vivian. I do it too. Yeah.
Awesome. So you traveled all over the world, in various places, photographing cannabis and cultures and places associated with cannabis. What are a few more interesting or remote places that you got to go to?
Well, I traveled, a lot. There are a lot. Going to Germany, for example, was just a wonderful experience because I got to go see where at that point in time, Ruhr glass pipes were the premier glass pipes of in the industry. So I got to go to Frankenthal, Germany, to see their plant, and all the glass blowers were turning out this wonderful glass. So things like that are just wonderful. Ben Dronkers invited me to come see his hemp fields in Northern Holland. So you get to see things that this was back in 1996. We didn't even dream of seeing this kind of stuff in the United States. And then you go to a hemp field out in the middle of nowhere, and you see hemp that's going on for acres. So it was really, it was eye-opening in many ways seeing this, and also in Canada. I remember going into Canada to photograph those big hemp fields when hemp became legal. And I remember coming into going across customs. They asked, "Where are you going?" I said, "Well, I'm going up to see a farmer." "What kind of farmer?" "Well, he's a friend of mine." I said, "Well, what does he grow?" And I said hemp. And the customs agent said to me, "Hemp is legal, so you don't have to hide it." So it was really eye-opening for me. What was exotic was all these places that had really embraced cannabis in so many ways, and here the United States was light years behind, and we still are. I mean, for God's sake, how can half the country still have, how can you still be busted for cannabis? It's unreal. Upside-down world.
Absolutely, man. I totally relate. I am speaking to Malcolm McKinnon, and we're going to have to roach this segment, pay the rent for a few minutes, but come right back because we are going to really dive in the second segment, so don't go anywhere.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
Elevate your everyday with that Shuggies feeling, with the sweet taste of Shuggies. Add a cup of Shuggies to your morning coffee. Ah, how sweet it is. Shuggies infuses cannabis and cane sugar to make it the perfect sweetener with benefits. Make your happy hour happier with a dunk of Shuggies in your drink. Order your Shuggies now at shoogies.com or find it in dispensaries throughout California. Whenever you crave a little sweet, pick up Shuggies, the sweet, sweet take anywhere treat.
We're back to Hemp Presents, only on Cannabis Radio. Now, back to our headstrong hemperer of hemp, Vivian McPeak.
And we are back on Hemp Presents with veteran photojournalist Malcolm McKinnon. So, Malcolm, I just have to ask, you are globetrotting, taking pictures of some of the most amazing weed and even other substances Did you sample the wares while you're out and about?
Always, always.
Well, how can you write an article, right, if you don't know what you're talking about?
I know. Yeah, the only time I didn't is when, you know, sometimes you would rent marijuana for photo shoots, and the growers were very, very specific. You know, like they said, you know, if you whatever is not there when you return it, you're going to pay for. So you maybe would smoke a joint. You know, that's about it. That's the only time. But otherwise, people were very, very generous with their cannabis. Traveling was never really a problem. I was more worried about traveling in the United States than I was going to Canada or Amsterdam or somewhere like that. You know, and also I never traveled with marijuana going over international lines, but I did travel with a great deal of marijuana. People were very generous to a High Times photographer, and believe me, I had some close calls. I have to say, one time somebody in Trinity County gave me a half a pound of pot, and I said, I'm taking it home. And a Delta person came up to me and said, they said, that's a very interesting cologne you're wearing. And I had the wherewithal to say, I don't know what you're talking about. And I got very, very kind of like stiff with her, and she backed off right away. But that was very, very close. And another time in your wonderful town of Seattle, I came through customs like an idiot, and I forgot I had a glass pipe in my pocket. And the guy who was an old guy at the security, he said, what's in your pocket? I pulled it out, and he just looked at me. He said, put that back in your pocket. He said, you know, you have two kids. You know, don't be an idiot. So thank you, Seattle. You know, seriously. So that was, I was very, 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 very careful, but somebody gives you a half a pound, seriously. I'm taking it.
Yes, yes. I'm hip. Even today, right? Even today. You know, it's funny. The first time I went to the Cannabis Cup in Amsterdam in 95, it was like you mentioned, I'm just like, oh my God, look at all this weed and look at these plants. And it was like amazing. You know, I'd never seen anything like that up close before. And then of course, these days I'm just kind of bored with that. I'm bored with huge grows.
I know. But back when the cannabis
plants.
Right. But back when the cannabis was going on, I mean, it really opened Americans' eyes. I said, we want this in America, and so the Cannabis Cup, which Steve Hager founded, really opened Americans' eyes in a great deal of ways. It's still going, but it's not the same as it was. Because it really, back then in the 90s, it really was something else in Amsterdam.
Oh, yeah. I mean, walking into a coffee shop and saying, oh, my God, there's a smorgasbord of weed. They've got a menu for weed at the counter.
No.
And you
sitting
can
in the,
basically
right.
get anything you want. And it was the novelty was so profound in those days. I was like, oh, my God,
I remember sitting in the window of the greenhouse, sitting there smoking a joint. As you're watching traffic go by, I said, this is the best. I'm drinking coffee and having a joint. This is fantastic, And I remember saying, I was on CNN, I remember a few years back, and I said, what really needs to happen in New York is we need coffee houses, just like Amsterdam. They looked at me like I was an alien from outer space. But, I said, hey, folks, it's coming. It's going to be coming, and it's going to change things. And that's what, every city needs, for God's sake. Have coffee shops with the pot. What possible harm could it do to the social fabric of the United States?
And the thing about the coffee shops is you could buy weed and roll it up on the table and smoke it right there. And that's where we are way behind here in America.
Oh, my goodness.
Nothing remotely like that in the most, permissive of states.
I know, it's the truth. And it could transform, the city economies. It makes cities attractive to tourists. Sit down in a coffee shop in New York City, have a joint, then go on your way. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, if you can sit down in a bar and drink alcohol, right?
Yeah.
Then why in the hell, can't you light up a J? Okay, there's an issue with you can't be around smoke or whatever, then put it on the roof, right? Or
have It would also revive the art scene, poetry, folk music, just new kinds of arts. It could really revive the entire coffee shop scene that we saw with the beatniks in the 60s, late 50s.
Absolutely.
Think that would be great.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll take a joint of White Widow and an espresso. In fact, make it an marijuana with cream.
You bet. That's it. I want it.
So, at Thanksgiving with the family, did you ever say, so Malcolm, how is work going? How are those discussions?
Well, my dad was always he'd always look at me and say, Malcolm, smoking a lot of marijuana these days? And I'd always say, how much is a lot? You know, but he was always, you know, he always was hoping I'd get a different job. But, you know, in the end, he put up with it. You know, he,
do you have like younger relatives that have been, oh my God, you know, Malcolm is the coolest,
I was a rock star. I was a rock star, believe me.
I can imagine.
All of my daughter's friends would say, you know, when they would meet her, they'd tell her, her dad is the editor of High Times. They would tell her that right off the bat. You know, that's what she had to deal with.
How about celebrities? Did you also interact with, take pictures and interview celebrities and stuff like that? Rock stars and
so many. I mean, I really, really was fortunate. I mean, Roger Daltrey got to sit down with, and Peter Fonda, Dennis Hopper, Louis Black, Jesse Ventura when he was running for governor, and then I interviewed him again like 17 years later. So many people, you know, I was lucky enough. And Woody Harrelson, I got to travel with, of course, and when he planted, this is 25 years ago, in June 1st, when he planted four hemp seeds in Beattyville, Kentucky. This is 25 years ago. So I was there to watch this happen. And then he orchestrated his own arrest. So,
Gatewood Galbraith, right?
Gatewood was the best, and he died. You know, he got pneumonia, and he died. You know, very, very quickly. It was really, really sad. But he was a force. And I got to ride on his. I remember when he was running for governor. I got to ride on his campaign bus, and we're smoking a joint on his campaign bus. I said, "Man, this is something else." And I remember we stopped at a diner, and I said, "Let me pay for this." He goes, "Is this your money or is this High Times money?" He goes, "What's High Times money?" He goes, "Nope, I'm paying for it." You know, very honest guy.
He was a really a courageous, outspoken, great leader, a great activist and advocate.
A great mind. I mean, that was the thing. He had a great mind. How he viewed liberties in America, you know, was something refreshing. You know, you forget about these our basic understanding of what liberties are.
Yeah. Yep. You know, Woody Harrelson came to Seattle Hemp Fest, which I've been the director of for 30 years, and he came twice. And I just found Woody to be a tremendously down-home, easily approachable, just an awesome person. You know, it was kind of the opposite of the rock star celebrity persona that some people come with. Did you find him to be the same way?
Yeah, I traveled with Woody quite a bit from, you know, because the litigation of his case took 4 years. So I got to know him quite a bit. And I watched him, you know, deal with people. And he was always polite. He had that kind of Southern politeness. He was always polite to people. Sometimes he would get a little bit tense and he'd have a little bit, you know, because there was a point in 96, 97 where he was donating a tremendous amount of money to the hemp movement and to the environmental movement. And people heard about this. And so every time people saw him, they were hitting him up for money. So he could sometimes just like, okay, that's enough. I'm done. And, you know, he just cut people off. But he was extremely generous. I don't know how active he is anymore. I'm sure he is extremely philanthropic. Still, he makes a tremendous amount of money, and I'm sure he's giving his money to environmental causes. But he's taken kind of like a backseat to that kind of environmental celebrity that he had in the 90s and in the early 2000s, because he was the first celebrity, big-time A-list celebrity to come out and really stand up for marijuana and for hemp. I mean, he was something else. You know, people made fun of him at that time, and he put his career in danger. Thankfully, his career is flourishing still. But, you know, he put his celebrity on the line. There's no doubt about it.
We have about a minute till the next break, but I won't ask you to name any names, but did you interact, unless you want to, but did you interact with any celebrities who were kind of assholes, you know, kind of, you know, stuck up and hard to get along with?
I was always amazed at how nice people were. The only people who really, you know, gave me a little bit of a hard time was when I was photographing Jason Mewes once, when we put him on the cover. You know, I had to shoot them separately because the art director put Jason on the shoulder of Kevin Smith. And so I was shooting him, and he was just being uncooperative. And I kind of snapped at him. I said, dude, you know, I'm trying to do this for the cover, okay? And he kind of straightened up. And, you know, Richard Belzer didn't really want to, you know, when I shot him for Hemp Times, he didn't really want to do it. He wanted to said, no, I'm staying in my apartment. I had a whole thing set up for him to where I wanted to shoot him. No, I'm staying right here in the living room. Sorry. So, you know, you really can't do anything. But, you know, generally, I'll tell you, Vivian, I mean, people are have been extremely nice. And, you know, sometimes you're just amazed. Like Bryan Cranston, what a nice guy, just a wonderful guy. And Lewis Black, you know, just wonderful and friendly. Got to hang out with him afterwards. Roger Daltrey, you know, I drank a bottle of wine with him. And they're just, you know, you know, I hate to sound like a cliche, but they're no different than us, these guys, you know?
Well, maybe I'm being presumptuous, but I just find that to be the case in the cannabis community in general, that people tend to be pretty...
I think so, too. It's called marijuana consciousness, and I think we're all aware of that. You know, you smoke a joint together, you know, everybody gets down to a level where you can interact without, you know, pretense. That's the way I look at it.
Well, I'm still talking to Malcolm McKinnon, everybody, and we're going to come right back after this next break for our final question, so don't go anywhere.
Time to roll out for the people that let us Hemp Present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
Hey, take a look at this. They're selling smart pots.
They have pot that can make you smart? Where is it?
Not that kind of pot. Smart pots are the best aeration container to grow your plants. Check this out. This is the original fabric container for faster producing, healthier plants. They're made with a superior fabric that delivers high yields. Plus, smart pots are reusable and sustainable, so you can use them over and over again, no matter if you use them indoor or outdoor.
That's very smart, but how good are they for the environment?
Smart pots are BPA-free and lead-free, so you'll always be able to ensure a pure, clean grow, and they're 100% made in the U.S. Over 28 million smart pots have already been sold, so it seems like a smart investment.
Look for smart pots in close to 2,000 garden centers throughout North America and ask for the original fabric container. Find a store near you or order yours online at smartpots.com.
We're back to Hemp Presents, only on Cannabis Radio. Now, back to our headstrong emperor of hemp, Vivian McPeak.
And we are back with Malcolm McKinnon, veteran High Times photojournalist. Malcolm, I understand that you also do Indigenous First Nations photography. I would like you to touch on that and also let us know how people can check your work and contact you and all that other kind of stuff.
Oh, thanks, Vivian. I mean, this is something that I've been involved in since 1990, actually. I was very, very fortunate to be invited to a Native American church ceremony, which is the peyote ceremony. And for me, it was something that was really transformational. And I don't want to get woo-woo about it, but it certainly seemed to put me on a path where I've been, you know, doing Native American photography now for 30 years. And I've been, you know, I photographed and interviewed some of the great, great figures of the Native American movement, from Russell Means, Clive Bellecourt, John Trudell, Dennis Banks, all of these people, you know, I've got to meet. And I, of course, Leonard Peltier, who's been in jail for 45 years, a victim, a real political prisoner here in America.
Winona LaDuke, right?
Yeah, Winona LaDuke as well. Yes, I interviewed her, and you know, she's a friend of mine as well. I mean, I worked with her in a couple of other things. Very, very, very fortunate, and something that I've just been involved in. I was part of the Navajo Hemp Project when the Navajo Nation tried to grow hemp back in 1996, 97, and of course the Lakota Hemp Project. And now, 20 years later, after we first did that, they first tried to grow hemp, and the feds came in and shut them down. Now the Lakota are growing hemp legally on the Pine Ridge Reservation. So, it's been a real journey for me, and something that I still continue. If people want to check out my photography, they can go to malcolmmckinnon.com, or they can go to nativeamericanphotography.com. You'll end up in the same place. But I also encourage people to say something about Leonard Peltier. You can go to whoisleonardpeltier.info and find out all about his case, or just, you know, go online and check out the movie Incident at Oglala, which will tell you the whole story. This is one of the worst miscarriages of justice in United States history. And the fact that this man is in jail is just a tragedy. So, these are issues for me that I continue to try to use whatever voice I have to, make sure people know about. But thank you, Vivian, for noting that, the Native American photography, because it's part of what I've been doing.
It's so important that we support First Nations, Indigenous people and communities in this country. I mean, it's so vital. This is their land that we're on.
Of course
and,
it is.
They are just oppressed, and our government has broken almost every treaty that it made. And they're still not treated right, you know, as we've seen with pipelines going through their land and to preserve their water purity and stuff. I mean, it's just outrageous. It's wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And this has been going on for years and years. And you see the Dakota pipeline, for example, all of these nonviolent protesters were just ganged up on by military forces. I mean, they had water hoses turned on them in the middle of winter. They were absolutely shut down. And then you have this insurrection at the Capitol. And what happens? Nothing.
And the American media just pretty much ignores indigenous issues, right? Yeah, I mean,
they do. Well, I remember Russell Means told me that. I asked him, how do you think people are perceived? He goes, we're not perceived. We're invisible.
Yeah, yep. And we should probably call out John Trudell, who is a great cannabis activist as well, and a Native American activist who we lost not too long ago.
Not too long ago, and he attended the Cannabis Cup twice and performed at the Cannabis Cup. I was lucky enough to photograph and talk to him and interview him a few times. He's really just a tremendous guy, and you know, he was a very serious guy, but had a tremendous sense of humor as well. He was
my DNA needs THC. I love that grass fire song that he did, right?
Absolutely.
Well, Malcolm McKinnon, founded at NativeAmericanPhotography.com. Thank you for your significant contribution to the cannabis community. And thank you so much for being on Hemp Present, my friend.
Oh, my pleasure, Vivian. Thank you.
All right. You take care. That concludes this installment of Hemp Present on Cannabis Radio. When it comes to prohibition, you got the right not to reign. Silent activism requires a voice. So find your voice and speak up for justice, because resistance is fertile. Now it's time to turn up the music, maestro, and take back the plant, because I'm out.
Marijuana! THC! Sweet sativa! Dick and cream!
The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.